Revelation chapter 13. We began our study of the false prophet last week. His character profile is given to us in full in verses 11 through 18 of this chapter. And we had to take it in two parts. Last week, part one was the false prophet aiding and abetting the Antichrist in his efforts to power grab over the religions of the world, bringing them all together into one forced religion, a global religion that would be essentially nothing more than the worship of the Antichrist. But religion is only half of the equation. To really get a stranglehold on the world, Antichrist's plan is to rule over the two most crucial elements of a civilized society. That would be religion, of course, number one. That contains, you know, all of your morals and basics for living civic life. But not just religion, also the economy, the world economy. So verses 11 through 15 last week, religion bows to the Antichrist. Verses 16 through 18 this week, we're going to see the world's economy bow to the Antichrist. Now, we only have three verses to study today, so we're going to do this a little different. I won't promise it's going to be extremely short because it's only three verses. There is still a lot to talk about, but I can promise you it's not going to be as lengthy as last week. I don't know if you could tell. I was stressed and tired and overwhelmed last week trying to figure out how to get in everything that I wanted to say, and I almost said everything I wanted to say, and that's why we were so long. Today we'll be sort of back to normal on that, but we are going to do things a little different. We don't usually do it this way. Today we're going to begin by reading down through these three verses, and then we're going to come back through it and pick it apart and see what there is to learn about the future fall of global economy into the hands of Antichrist. So let's read that, verses 16 through 18, and then let's just start going back through it. Verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, verse 17, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And verse 18, here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. Now, to get the right feel for the context, you really have to read through all of those verses, verses 11 through 18, in one sitting. You have to read it straight through. And if you do that, you can feel the context. You'll know that this is the false prophet's profile. This section, verses 11 through 18, is largely, almost exclusively about him, the false prophet. So the context of verse 16, would be that he is the second beast or the false prophet. It is the false prophet who causes all to receive a mark. Verses 11 through 15, part one, it was this same beast, the false prophet, who acted as Antichrist's PR man and convinced the world to trust and believe in the Antichrist. It was this false prophet who sold the world on the Antichrist and brought all of the world religions together into one unified religion controlled by the Antichrist. And it was the false prophet who evidently called the biotech company and said, yes, I would like to order one AI humanoid likeness of the Antichrist. And could you make sure that that is the most advanced, the most connected, the most powerful technology that has ever been created or made by mankind? That's my version of verse 14. And if you were here last week, you know where I arrive at that. John just calls that the image of the beast. Now, I'm pretty certain that I understand this correctly, that the image of the beast will have connectivity to the mark of the beast. It's almost as if the image of the beast is the AI technology that runs the entire system. It connects religion and everything that's happening in world religion. It connects that with world economy, and it's sort of the AI brains behind it. So if that image, if that AI technology sees something that it doesn't like, it can pull the plug on a person, and it can even cause their death. We read that in verse 15. So if you think that social media censoring is bad right now, just wait, because the day is coming. Things are going to get much worse. What's that? A mean tweet? Okay, no groceries for you this week. What's that? A negative post about the Antichrist? All right, that's it. You're done. You're dead. Sorry, but not sorry. That's how the way this system is going to work. The false prophet is going to do the same thing with the world's economy, because the false prophet is basically Antichrist's gopher. You know, Antichrist will say, go for this, go for that, and he'll do it. Whatever the Antichrist needs done, it is the false prophet that does all of that legwork. It's the false prophet that makes all of that happen and then hands it over to the Antichrist to run. So it is the false prophet that organizes, not just last week, all of the world's religion to come into one, but it will be the false prophet who organizes the takeover of the economy, a global economy that he will hand to the Antichrist for the Antichrist to rule. Now, with the image of the beast, that was the bait and the trap for the global domination of religion. And this week, the mark of the beast will serve as that same thing for the economy. The mark of the beast will be both the bait and the trap for the global domination of the economy. We read it. Everyone, all people, everyone is caused, coerced, or forced to get the mark of the Antichrist. Now, the word mark is translated from the Greek word karagma. And among other things, it means a badge of servitude. In John's day, it was almost always associated with the Roman emperor. So if you saw Caesar's face on a coin, that was the mark of Caesar. If you saw Caesar's seal on a letter or a legal document, that was the mark of Caesar. And that mark, the mark of Caesar, that karagma, was the difference between legal and illegal, authorized and unauthorized. And so the beast system, using the mark of the beast, will work the same way. It is his way to control what is legal and what is authorized. Verse 16, no matter who you are, no matter where you're from, no matter what your socioeconomic status is in life, verse 17, if you want to buy or sell anything during these final 3.5 years of tribulation, you will need Antichrist's mark, because the whole economic system will all be under Antichrist's authority. And verses 16 and 17 say to me that the mark of the beast will be a combination of individual, unique identifier numbers, verse 16, and the number, the name, or the mark of the beast, verse 17. It is a combination of those two. At least that's what I see in those two verses. So I would think that it would look something like this. The number of the beast or the name of the beast is sort of like the prefix or the container. And into that prefix or container will be your specific, individual, unique identifying number. Now, if that's not what is implied by verses 16 and 17, it doesn't change the fact that I believe that's going to happen. I think it's almost an absolute must that every single one of us, well, we won't be here. When I say us, I mean mankind in general. But everyone that is alive and on the earth at this time will have some form of unique identifier, because that is the only way that Antichrist could control the whole world. Now, who knows where technology will be by then? It could be that this mark that is connected to the system, that is manipulated and controlled by the image of the beast, it could be that that thing has the possibility of reading and identifying individual DNA and sending that back to the system. Who knows where technology will be? But I do believe we'll have a unique identifier number. Well, they will be gone. But they will have a unique identifier number in order to enable Antichrist to truly control the world. And it's really nothing new to us. We're used to this, right? We've been getting this from the government for many years. We've got identifier numbers for everything. If you want to drive a car, you need a driver's license number. If you want to be a part of Social Security, you're going to need to have a Social Security number. If you want to go to the doctor, the doctor's going to give you a medical number. Just about everything you do these days, you need a number for it. If you're going to travel overseas, you're going to need a passport number. Or what do they call it now? The smart card. Whatever they switch to. I don't know. I'm behind the times on that one. So we're used to having these unique identifiers. We're used to these numbers. We're pretty much glutted on them in life today. And we have reached the point where society is beginning to think this. Should we really have all of these separate numbers, or shouldn't we just make it so that each person has a unique number and everything is connected to that number, whatever it is? Your driver's license number, it's that number. Your passport number, it's that number. Your Social Security number, same number. One number that just serves and operates as any possible identification number that you would need. It just makes sense that the one number would be the way to go. And that is exactly what we're already moving toward, if you didn't know that. The banks want us to go to this. The government wants us to go to this. The military started this a long time ago with identification for soldiers. And ominously enough, they called it the mark. You ever hear that? The mark, M-A-R-C. It means multi-technology automated reader card. And that card is all of that soldier's numbers, any kind of identification they could want. It's all on one card. That card can be tracked. If they're wounded in battle, they know exactly where that soldier is. It's a brilliant solution. But that's just a card. And in verses 16 through 18, the mark that we are reading about is going to be attached to the body, either the right hand or the forehead. Now, why is that? It's because of convenience. Those are the two most commonly exposed areas of the body. Just think about this, and I'm going to try not to make any jokes about Walmart shoppers, but when you go to the store to purchase anything, or wherever you go where you're going to have to purchase something, what are you probably wearing? On a typical day, most people are going to wear socks and shoes, pants. Again, not going to be tempted to talk about Walmart shoppers, but you're probably going to wear a shirt. You might have short sleeves or long sleeves, so maybe your arms are covered, maybe not. If you're not bald like me, then you've got hair on your head, or maybe you're wearing a hat. So in a typical situation, the two most common areas that are going to be exposed are what? The hands and the front of the face, which includes the forehead. So this is just like making perfect sense. The location of the mark just logically reasons out. It's the two most exposed areas of the body. But that's the location of the mark. What about the logistics of the mark? What about the logistics of the mark? The entire system, including the logistics of the mark, make perfect sense. It is a natural progression of thought and methodology that has brought us to this point. At one time, all financial economic systems started out as coin-based. And that was more difficult depending on what you were buying and how expensive it was. No big deal if you're taking a couple coins to buy a loaf of bread or what have you. If you're making a big purchase back then, you know, like a chariot or something, now you need a lot of coins, or you need chunks of gold. So as we progressed in thought and method in economy, we moved away toward the coin. We moved away toward the metal. We came up with this idea. We thought, what if We didn't have to lug around wheelbarrows full of coins and blocks and chunks of gold and silver in order to make big purchases. What if we came up with a system where we could take all of those precious and very heavy metals and put them in a vault somewhere? And then instead of lugging that around for our purchases, what if we had a cash-based society, a paper-based society, where that piece of paper, that reserve note, that dollar bill or that 20 bill was representative of that chunk of metal, gold or silver, that was vaulted and yet belonged to us? A much easier way to do it. And it made sense and it worked great. And it's a better way. Don't you appreciate that? Being able to pay for things with bills instead of blocks of gold that you're pulling out of your trunk and carrying into the store. It's much better. But it didn't solve all the problems. There's a problem with cash-based society. The susceptibility to theft is greater. It's tougher for a thief to run off with your wheelbarrow full of gold that you're wheeling into the store to buy your groceries. It's much easier for a thief to take some paper bills from you when you're not looking. So we moved on. Methodology and thought process. Progress led us to the next logical phase, which would be checks. A checkbook. It's brilliant because now you can be way more precise with who gets that money. You put their name on that check and only they can cash that check. And the great thing now is that you have a safer way to mail money to people. Now, in case you didn't know this, it is not illegal to mail cash through the UPS, or pardon me, the USPS. It's not illegal. It is actually legal to do. It's just maybe perhaps not the smartest thing to do, especially if you don't cover it and the bills can be seen. It's more likely to be stolen. But the check system, it was better for that sense. It eliminated a great deal of theft, but it didn't solve all the problems, did it? Well, first of all, thieves just sort of evolve with technology, so thieves figured out how to work in check fraud to all that. They found a way around the system. They still found a way to cheat and steal. And on top of that, banks were realizing the high cost of the checkbook system. First of all, it costs money to print checkbooks. And then secondly, with each transaction that is made with a check, it is a higher transaction fee in order for the banks to process that. So once again, progression of thought and methodology led us to what? The credit card. That's brilliant, right? That's going to be the answer to all of our problems. Now that has eliminated check fraud. You don't have to lug bars of gold to make a purchase. You know how I'd like to buy a F-150. Here's my 50 bars of gold. Or I'd like to get a tank full of gas. So here's my 30 bars of gold. You don't have to do that. That's eliminated the muscle and the machinery to move the heavy precious metals. That's gone. You don't have to worry about the cash getting stolen. You don't have to worry about check fraud because the credit card is here. And now it's a much more efficient way for the bank to do it because they don't have to print those checkbooks. Well, they probably still do with your check account. They probably send those out anyway. But they don't have those larger transaction fees with every check that you send. Now it's a much smaller transaction fee and all they do is type a few things. And all that happens is some numbers on the computer screen attached to your name, your ID. Those numbers change, and that's it. That's it. That's done. But once again, the thieves continued to evolve. That system did not eliminate every disadvantage. And with the invention of the credit card system, thieves didn't suddenly become saints. No, they just became smarter thieves. They figured out hacking and they figured out stolen identity scams and credit card fraud. So the next progression of thought and methodology is bringing us to what? A microchip planted in the human body. And that brings up a scriptural point. If you look at verse 16, you see that word on. That word on can be translated as either on or in. So according to the verse, we're not exactly sure what it's saying. Maybe it's saying that mark will be on your right hand or in your right hand. Maybe it's saying that mark will be on your forehead or in your forehead. So I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction here. I predict that the mark of the beast will be administered through implanted microchips into the human body. It is the final progression. It is the future of financial economic system. That resolves nearly all of the inconveniences and issues. Currently, someone can steal your cash. They can trick you into check fraud. They can steal your identity. They can swipe your credit card. They can steal your bank account number. But what if every person only had one single identifier? And what if that one single identifier was stored on a microchip that is implanted into your skin? And what if you had to swipe or scan that microchip for every purchase that you made? That would solve everything right off the bat. It would eliminate theft. Because think of what a thief would have to do now in order to use your bank account to buy something. They would have to cut off your hand and lug that into the grocery store. They would have to, worse yet, lop off your head, stick it in a bowling ball bag, go into the store, get their items, go to the checkout, and when it came time to pay, they'd have to pull your severed head out of that bag and scan it or swipe it across the register. Now, that may raise some eyebrows. At that point, the cashiers may say, maybe we have a case of stolen identity here. Maybe, just maybe. Do you see how that would solve the problem of theft right away? It really takes care of so many issues with just the implementation of that concept. So the world, through just thought and progress, is pressing us toward a cashless system. A cashless system that eliminates theft of all sorts. Identity theft, financial theft. It eliminates the sale of anything that is deemed to be illegal or unauthorized. Because if it's not authorized to be sold, it's not going to work. You can't swipe your hand to purchase illegal drugs on the street. You can't scan your head in order to get that next high. It solves a lot of our problems, and not to mention all of the other benefits that come with that. You won't ever have to worry about getting that cart of groceries or products up to the cash register and then going, oh no, I forgot my wallet and my phone at home. I can't pay. That's never going to happen, because just think about that for a second. It's impossible for you to get up to the checkout line and go, oh man, I forgot to bring my right hand again. Or, oh man, I lost my head again. I can't believe it. No, you can't. You can't leave those things behind. And that's appealing. I did this just yesterday at Eaton Park. We had our men's breakfast. And Anchored Fellowship pays me to pay for that meal for the men. So I was expected to pay, and I showed up without my wallet, and I went, oh no, uh-oh. That implant is sounding good right about now. I wish I had a microchip plant that I could scan. And then, of course, I asked them if I could use my phone. They said no. They were wrong. I did anyway. It worked. The point being, none of that would ever happen. The convenience of it is just incredible. Plus the incredible incentive of GPS tracking. This system is completely traceable and trackable. Everyone and everything that would happen under this system It can all be completely traced and tracked. They could shut down illegal cells. They could track down criminals, illegal aliens, drug traffickers, human traffickers. Think of how easy it would be to find your kidnapped kids. I mean, we do this now with pets, right? We put microchip implants in them the size of a piece of rice. And when we lose them, we get the GPS scan out and then we go get them. Well, it'd be the same way with kidnapped kids. It's the answer to really all of the problems of the current economic system. Now, people will still try to be people, so they'll still try to pull off crime. But if you ask me, this system would eliminate nearly all successful long-term and wide-scale crime. It just, boom, it wipes it all out. Because there is total positive connectivity and control at the top. But see, therein lies the problem. This would be a wonderful, wonderful system that would eliminate nearly every issue and every inconvenience if the person or persons at the top controlling it were godly and righteous. I'd even settle for morally decent. If you just had that, the system would probably work and it would probably be better for everyone. But as you know, the problem is that by the time the world moves to this system, the man at the top, the beast, the Antichrist, is wicked to the core. Because it is Satan incarnate. And there's only one concern there, and that is oppressive and total control over all of the world. It's what Satan has always wanted. We've been talking about it for weeks in here. He has always wanted to control the world. He's always wanted to be like God. He's always wanted to receive the world's worship. And anything that would kick against that, anything that would resist that, then the image of the beast pulls the plug, censors them. Worse yet, verse 15, puts them to death. So what is stopping us from moving to this kind of system right now? Well, it used to be technology. That used to be what was preventing us from moving toward a system like that. It's not technology anymore. Technology is not what is preventing us from moving to that kind of system. In fact, this microchip system is already in use. I'm sure you've read articles or seen videos about it. Companies are using the microchip system in order to log in and keep track of and just the whole nine yards with their employees. They scan their hand and they get access into the front door. They swipe their hand over their computer pad or whatever, and they're logged into their systems. They want to buy something from the snack machines at work. They wave their hand in front of the machine, and they make that purchase with that microchip that's implanted in their hand. In Sweden, they are heavily relying upon this system, and not just for work stuff, but for economy stuff. Thousands of people in Sweden have chosen to get this microchip implanted into their skin, and they use it for everything. It's the key to unlock their door at home. It's the key to get into the building at work. It's the key, the microchip plant, it's the key to start their car and drive their vehicle. It's the key to make their purchases. They're doing it in Sweden right now. Anyone see a problem with that? The control is at the top. And what happens if you fall onto the wrong side of the people in control? They can lock you out of your house, shut your car down, keep you from going to work, and they can keep you from buying stuff. And that is the problem with this system. So what's preventing us? It's not technology anymore. The only thing that is preventing the world from moving to this kind of system is a psychological issue. That is the only thing that is preventing this. And if you ask me, the world has Christians to be thankful for this, because it's been the church for many, many years that has been warning the world, Even before we had the technology, we've been warning the world that this is the system that the world is coming to, and it is not going to end well. In fact, it's going to end everything. Now, it once again is the issue of the church being salt and light to the world. Salt preserves from corruption, and light illuminates. It opens the eyes. And we're told there in the book of 2 Thessalonians that it is the world that is restraining the Antichrist from coming and doing this stuff. Our influence is salt to preserve this world from just total and instant putrefaction. It is our influence as the church that sheds the light on some of these things and then puts in the mind, whether you're a believer or unbeliever, it puts in the mind that psychological hesitation. Wait a minute. I've read about this kind of system. I've heard about the system of the beast. I've heard about the mark of the beast. And I think I'm going to hold out as long as I possibly can. I think I'm going to resist as long as I possibly can. And that's a good thing. But guess what? Church, chapter 4 is coming. Revelation chapter 4 is coming. The church is going to be taken away. And that force which is now restraining the Antichrist from coming onto the scene and accomplishing his plan, that restraining force, when we go, is taken up with us. So because there's a chapter 4 where the church is taken away and that influence, that salt and light is gone, because of that, there's going to be a chapter 13 and the world will take the mark and the world will be controlled by the image of the Antichrist and the Antichrist himself. Now, verse 18 again. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast. For it is the number of a man. His number is 666. According to verse 8, figuring out the number of the beast requires both wisdom and understanding. So who's out? Me too. Let's pray and go home. No. We have the wisdom and understanding that we need to figure this out, at least for the most part. Let me explain that. I'll start you off easy. The number 6 in Bible numerology is the number of man. It is the number of incompleteness. Now, contrast that with the number 7. The number 7 is the divine number. It's the number of God. It is the complete number. So 7 is a number that can only be assigned to God because everyone else falls short. On a scale of 0 to 7, all you could possibly be is a 6 out of 7 because you're a fallen creation. You're always going to fall short of divine perfection. God is the 7. We human beings, we are 6s. Now, our minds could run with that if we look at the number 666. It could seem like that would run parallel with this unholy trinity that we have been studying. Because if you were trying to come up with a number representation of the holy trinity, the triune God, it would be what? It would have to be 777. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Divine, divine, divine. So if you were trying to come up with a number representation of the unholy trinity, that would be the dragon, Satan, the beast, the Antichrist, and the other beast, the false prophet. What number representation would you give them? You give them 666. Well, I'd probably give them a bunch of zeros, but it's not like a Yelp review. So, yeah, we would go with 666, which means imperfection, 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 incompletion, incompletion, incompletion. In other words, not God, not God, not God. It's like a threefold warning that the dragon, the Antichrist, and the false prophet are not who they say they are. But, before you go down that road, it seems like that would be a really cool connection to make. But before you go down that road, there's something you really need to know. It's very important that you know this. The number, as written in the Greek language, is not 666. It is not 6, 6, 6. It's not a 6, another 6, and then another 6. It is not three individual 6s. It is a total sum numeric value that the original Greek language gives us. It's not 666. It is 666. That's how it reads in the Greek, which means for us English people, it would be a value, a numeric value of 666. So yes, many people have been saying this wrong for a long time. 666 is not the number of the beast. 666 is the number of the beast. So it is more than just a number. It is a numeric calculation. Antichrist's name calculates to 666. Verse 8 told us that implicitly. And calculate is the best translated word here that we could possibly use for the Greek word sephidzo. Now, the King James Version translates that word as count. And that's okay-ish. That kind of gets us there. That makes the point. But the New King James Version gives us a better translated word. It's the word calculate. That is what John is driving for. Sephidzo. He's saying, I want you to calculate the name of the Antichrist. And if it's genuinely the Antichrist, that number is going to be a numeric value, a sum total of 666. Now, how on earth do we do that? How do we calculate the number of his name? Well, it is something that you cannot do with English words and names, and that is because we have an alphanumeric system. That means we separate out alpha and numeric. We separate out our letters and our numbers. But here's what you need to know about the Hebrew language and the Greek language. The Hebrew language and the Greek language did not do that in the early days of the languages. They did not have an alphanumeric system as we do. What the Hebrew and the Greek languages both did was they called on their letters to serve double duty, to have a dual purpose, and they would use their letters for their numbers as well, which means that when an early Hebrew writer or early Greek writer would write any word or name, there was an automatic value to it because the letters were also numbers. Now, they eventually, both of those languages, went to an alphanumeric system like we have today. But back then, many years ago, they used their letters for numbers as well. In Hebrew, that system is called gematria. And in Greek, that system is called isopsephi. Now, I know if you look at that word on a page, it looks like it should be pronounced isopsephi, and I think that would sound better, but that's not how it's pronounced. It's gematria and isopsephi. And since they are two different languages, you can take the same name or word, and the first thing you'd have to do is translate it into Greek to do isopsephi with it, or translate it into Hebrew to do gematria with it. But you can take the same word and the same name, translate it into those languages, use those processes to tally up the values of those words or names, and both gematria and isopsephi would give you a different numeric value because they're different systems. First, let me explain a little bit how they work. Perhaps you can already assume how they work, or maybe you've heard about these two systems before, but just in case, let me go through it. In the Hebrew system, gematria, the aleph bet, the alphabet for the Hebrew, starts out like this. First seven letters, aleph bet, gimel, dalet, he, waw, zion. Those are the first seven letters. So you start with aleph, the first letter of the Hebrew aleph bet. And aleph would serve as the letter aleph, and it would also serve as the number one. Then you got bet, which would be number two. You have gimel, which would be number three. You have dalet, which would be number four. You have Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, Hey. Hey would be the number five, and then Wow, W-A-W. It's V-A-V in modern Hebrew, but biblical Hebrew was Wow, W-A-W. That's the number six. And again, you could want to run with that. You go, wait a minute. I've done this before. Wait a minute. You know what that means? 666 in Hebrew letters, in Gematria is WWW, because wow. That's the letters WWW in English. So you could think, 666 is WWW. I get it. The internet is the mark of the beast. The internet is the number, because every URL address starts with WWW. Wow. But here's the thing, once again, it's not 666. It's 660. And six. So if you were writing this out in Gematria in Hebrew, it would be Mem. Mem is 600. The letter Mem is also 600. Samech is 60. And then, of course, we know Wow is the letter six. So it would be Mem, Samech, Wow. That's how it would be written in Hebrew. And right about now you're thinking, wow, I'm really learning a lot. Well, then we have Isopsephi, which is the Greek system. And in Isopsephi, you do the same thing with the, it would be the alpha beta in Greek. And so with Isopsephi, the letter alpha also serves as the number one. The letter beta is two. Gamma is three. Delta is four. Epsilon is five. And then sigma is the letter six. But again, it's not sigma, 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 666. No, it's 660. And six. So the way that it would be written in Hebrew would be Chi, Z, Sigma. And that is exactly how the Apostle John writes it in the original manuscripts. If you're reading this from the original manuscripts, it doesn't say 666 or even 666. It says Chi, Z, Sigma. That's 666. Well, okay, Arlen, you bored us with all of that. Now what? Which system did John intend to be used here? Hebrew, Gematria, or Greek, Isopsephi? Which one did he intend to use? And I would say to that, good question. Thank you for asking. That is really a good question. I don't really know the answer to that. I mean, it's true that John did write this in Greek. He wrote this in Greek letters. So some think, well, then that makes sense that John is referring to us using Isopsephi to calculate the value of the Antichrist name. But hey, keep something else in mind. Greek is John's second language. And everyone knows that when you learn a second language, you think in your first language. There is no escaping that. You're always going to think in your first language, and then you're going to express that thought in your translated, your second language. So John is a Hebrew thinker first. He's a Greek writer or expresser second. Keep in mind, too, what do we know about the Antichrist? He's a Jew. So I would say there's a very high percentage of a chance that the Antichrist is going to have a Jewish name. Which means if you're going to use Isopsephi, the Greek system, to translate the Antichrist name, or I should say to determine the numeric value of Antichrist's name, you first have to take his Hebrew name and translate it into Greek, and then use Isopsephi. But if you're going to use Hebrew, Gematria, to determine that value, to calculate that number, his name is ready to go. It's already in Hebrew. So to answer your question, I don't know. Probably the safest bet is anyone that you suspect to be the Antichrist, use both systems to calculate the number of their names and see what sticks. Now, you can, on your own time, learn both of these systems. I'm sure you will. There will be a major uptick in internet searches for Gematria and Isopsephi. You can gather up your lists of all the people you know and run them through the database and calculate them out and check to see if maybe your friends are potentially the future Antichrist. If you're wondering, I did already run all of your names through both of those systems. And it is alarming how many of you potentially could be the Antichrist in the future. For example, the entire board of elders here. No, I'm kidding. I didn't run your names. But You can do that if you want. You can use that system in that way. But what really makes this very challenging and difficult for us right now to calculate is the fact that you cannot start with a numeric value and then calculate out a bunch of potential names. You can't do that. Maybe a computer could. I think even that would take a lot of time. No, you have to start with a name. It has to be translated into one of these systems, Gematria or Isop-Sephi, and then you can calculate the number out and see if it adds up to 666. And there's another problem with that. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. I already talked about it. The Antichrist cannot be revealed. The son of perdition cannot be revealed until the Spirit of God through the church is lifted from the earth in the rapture. It's impossible. So we're not going to really ever see him on that world stage. Maybe if we're connected, we could anticipate that. We could see a character and think, he's got Antichrist written all over him. And then we could run his name. We could check him out. But for us, I think it's going to be an impossibility because he's going to lay low. He's going to just do his thing and bide his time until the moment that the church is gone. And then he's going to be known. And then people can start calculating, could this guy be the Antichrist? But church, I don't think we're ever going to really be able to get to do that. Now, it is kind of funny, though. Worship team, you can come on up. It is kind of funny because over the years, there have been quite a few attempts by quite a few people to figure out who the Antichrist is by trying to run numbers on their names. But unfortunately, in most cases, those attempts, those people, they lacked the two things that John said we need in verses 16 through 18. They lacked wisdom and understanding. Let me give you an example of this. Years ago, when Ronald Reagan was president, here's what they did. They decided, this guy could be the Antichrist. He's suave. He's smooth. Pretty good actor in his day. Smart with the economy. Smart with politics. Let's run his name. And so here's what they did. Ronald Wilson Reagan. Ronald. It has six letters in it. Wilson, it has six letters in it. Reagan, it has, oh my goodness, six letters in it. Conclusion, President Reagan is the Antichrist. No, that is completely messed up. That's completely bunk. That lacks wisdom and understanding. It is the system of either Gematria or Isop-Sephi that determines this. And it is a sum total value, not 666. But 666. Now, we have a lot more to talk about concerning the mark of the beast. So we'll study it more in chapter 14 and moving forward beyond there. But this is what chapter 13 has taught us about the mark of the beast. So let's just close with this. Let's close with this question. Is the COVID vaccine the mark of the beast? Yes. No, it's not. How about the microchip system? Any microchip system. If I get microchip today, have I gone too far? Have I taken the mark of the beast? Are they going to flip the switch in the future and that chip becomes the mark of the beast for me? And am I damned forever because of that? No, that is not the mark of the beast. I might encourage you to stay away from microchip in your body for privacy reasons, for personal reasons, for freedom reasons, but that is not the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast does not happen in this form until the midway point of the tribulation. So just think about, church, everything that we have studied about the tribulation so far. All of that has to happen before we get to this point. And the Lord says, okay, it's time for the world to make a choice. You're going with the Antichrist and you're getting the mark and worshiping the image and worshiping the Antichrist, or you're sticking with me and putting your life in danger. It is all of those things come first before this moment at the halfway point, which means here's what you need to be looking out for: a ruler that begins to conquer the world through peace in the first 3.5 years of the tribulation. Then you need to be watching for that political leader, that ruler, that man to flip out and lose his mind after 3.5 years of rule. And then you need to be looking out for this. Here's what you really need to be looking out for. Someone to tell you that you need to worship an AI humanoid of the Antichrist, that you need to worship this image of the beast. Now, when you hear those things, when you see those things in place, then you can start to figure it out. That's the mark of the beast. Until then, you have nothing to worry about. And better yet, folks, you shouldn't have anything to worry about today, because number one, you should either be saved and ready to go in chapter 4 when the rapture takes place, or you should be ready to make that decision and commitment today and come to Christ and be ready and choose his government over Antichrist government. We know what's coming, and we know what the Lord has promised to those that love and serve him. So the choice is laid out before you, and I'm going to give you the invite. Would you stand with me? If you do not know the Lord this morning, if he has not saved your soul, if you have not chosen him to be Lord and Savior of your life, I'm going to ask you to pray this prayer right after me.